Tape 5, Phases of Relationship.
On this tape, we're going to be dealing with the phases of a relationship, like the seasons of the world. I found over the last 20-plus years that relationships, like anything else, goes through its spring, summer, fall, and winter. And I've found that the phases are the first 3 months, the perfect phase. When you meet someone and the chemistry and the electricity works, it's from the gods. He's perfect, you're perfect, it's perfect, they're perfect. You are now doing everything exactly the way it's supposed to be done. You're putting that good foot out there, that projection system. You see, the interesting thing is, in your head, you have this ghostly lover, imagined person, who you are trying to find in flesh and blood, in a real person. That projection will usually last pretty much the first 3 months. So the best foot forward projection, in which he's doing it right, whether he's receiving or whether he's giving, whether you're receiving or giving, you're doing things intuitively. I hope authentically. Too often in this phase, people are doing what they think they should do. He should call and he should open the door and she should say, yes, please, thank you. And everybody's doing it according to the latest romance novel. If they're not really doing it accurately and appropriately, there will be the next phase, which we'll come to in a moment. In the perfect phase, men and women, or men and men, or women and women, generally do not tell their negative feelings or their negative thoughts. They suppress them, keep them hidden, because they know that love is going to conquer all, and it's all going to work out. The chemistry is so good. Now, as you're well aware, if they're dating, they probably have already had sex, and now the chemistry is getting involved, especially for her. If, however, they've negotiated a courtship in which they've agreed that there will be no heavy-duty sex, a little petting, a little fun, but no heavy-duty sex, then they will start to slide into the second phase. That second phase I called the imperfect phase. It's usually somewhere between 90 days and 120. It's the third, fourth, and fifth months in a relationship. The first three are perfect, the second three are imperfect. The imperfect phase follows the perfect as night the day. In this period, the projection starts to fall. The real love or the infatuation shows up. Infatuating and dating and not having a permanent relationship, uncommittability, all go together. Real love, spiritual real love. Now we start to test the real phase in the relationship. He brings in his baggage, his ex-wife, family, the fact that he doesn't have all the money you thought he did by the way he dressed in his car, her baggage, her ex, her family, and her kids, who she kept discreetly out of the way during the perfect phase, to the extent where you barely saw them. You knew they were out there existing somewhere, but you weren't really conscious of them. Now you start to slip. You start saying the negative feelings and the negative thoughts. And that wonderful sexual relationship that you so spontaneously began, usually without negotiating, is now not quite as perfect. One of the things that I know about premature sexuality is oftentimes both parties are very skittish. We found as therapists that if you really are secure with your sexual partner, if you've really become friends, if you've really learned how to be affectionate, when you finally do have sex intercourse, it starts off with security. There is no fumbling. It's not that first olive out of the bottle. It isn't premature. It doesn't have as many problems associated with it. But if there's going to be any problems, it will show up in the imperfect. she doesn't say yes enough, he doesn't ask often enough, that cute little trick that he did, he does every time, and now it's boring. She will not let the light be on, and on it goes. You now are starting to know each other for who you really are. You've had the wonders of the perfect, now you have the frailty of the imperfect. But as human beings are wont to do, we slough it off. Oh, it won't happen again. It'll be better in the future. And she only did it because it was a mistake, or he just fumbled around because it was just the day or the night. Now we get into the next period, the 6th through the 9th month. Now we have to start negotiating. Hopefully you've negotiated your courtship by good sexual contracts, longevity, continuity, and exclusivity. But now you've got to start negotiating the other items. And that's where a real friendship has to be the foundation of your relationship. In the negotiable period, I like people to talk about 4 topics. Time, space, money, and play. With regard to time, remember, we each have our own way of being. I'm an I before I'm a we, and I'm a we before I'm an us. So how much time do I need to work, to go to school, to deal with my friends, to sit around in my own place and stare at the TV, or read the book, or just paint a picture? How much time do you need as my partner to be alone with your girlfriends or with your boyfriends or whoever? How much time does it take for you to be satisfied that you've loved yourself? How much time do we want to be together? You know, I said in the last tape, I absolutely require a courtship experience once a week. That's one with ambience and with premeditation, and I want to take you out and dress this way and let's go have fun. It's not spontaneous survival eating at the local beanery. That is not a courtship. Very little romance in survival dating. Convenience is nice for a store, but it's not nice for a courtship. So how much time do we need? What makes you feel good about being with me? And what do you think you need as far as my time is concerned? Now, a woman with a career might not be able to give a man as much time as he wants because she has this career going. He, too, can have a career which she feels not too swift about because he sees her once a week. Yes, he's an intern in a hospital, and we know he's a really good catch, but what do you do in between the dates, the courtship dates? And when you are courting him and he's courting you, he falls asleep. He's so tired from that long staff meeting or that long shift he was on. So how do you handle we time? Better talk about it. And remember, use the tools. Honey, I think I need to see you thus and so. How do you feel about that? Well, I feel this way and I feel that way. What do you think about that? What do you want? This is where choosing your role and using your languaging comes in so importantly. That waltz takes place when you compliment, not compete. And then, of course, we've got us time. Party time, family time. When a relationship doesn't have enough time to itself, just the two of you, that intimacy between you, when there are too many stepkids and too many kids and too many friends and too much this and that, you dilute your intimacy time with this group intimacy time. Generally speaking, a couple has to socialize, bring new blood into the relationship, if for no other reason than to gossip or to talk about new ideas or do something besides staring at each other. Codependent couples eliminate people, places, and things in order to feed off of each other as if they're parasitically attached. but interdependent people, people who are individuals, who know what their role is, who know how to communicate, those are the people that can communicate and negotiate without intimidating. Now look, you better give that to me or I'm going to leave you. Or seducing. Of course you can have it your way. I'm just here to please you. Wrong. That's part of the codependency relationship. So time, I, we, and us, must be negotiated with respect and cherishing. Second thing to negotiate, space. Living together, not living together. Now, at this time, I want to go on tape to say, I do not, under any conditions, approve. I accept. You have a right to do what you want. I do not approve of romantic couples living together without social status. And that's generally some form of agreement that is made known. Today, we're even seeing that in some cities, gay couples are starting to be seen as truly a couple. Insurance, welfare benefits, different forms of societal goodies are now being placed at the disposal of a same-sex relationship. So the trend is set. But in particular between a man and a woman, physically, I do not approve of a woman especially living with a man. If you will recall from another tape, I said that one person brings status and financial stability, and the other brings a sensuous home and a sexually available body. When a woman brings a sensuous home and a sexually available body, and she doesn't have status, and she doesn't have financial stability, she is using up her very, very precious pulchritude and fertility. The clock is ticking, and until further notice, men who are men, who want to be men, generally see a woman for her fertility and her pulchritude. The younger and the more fertile is often seen as more desirable than the older and the less fertile. So, dear ladies, don't waste time living with a man without that ring on your finger. I don't care if it's a promise ring. I don't care what kind of a ring, as long as you can tell your mother, your girlfriends, and the people at work that you're engaged to be married in the next year or two. For men, if she lives with you and brings you a sensuous home and a sexually available body, well, you got her. But I'm not sure that it will work out in the long run. Because if there's one thing I know about the male of the species, is they very often get bored with things that are too simple, too available, and too inexpensive, let us say. So for a man, he has to sort himself out to know if he wants the responsibility of taking himself off the market, if he wants the responsibility of telling his mother and his friends that he's no longer single and available, that he's given a woman a ring, and he's made a date in the future, not too far in the future, to marry her, because that's what needs to be negotiated. Now, if you do get engaged and you do live together, you've got to sort out the issue of how do you exchange chores. Female bodies aren't the only ones that cook and do dishes. Male bodies can do it as well. Female bodies are not the only one that can clean a place. Male bodies are not the only ones that can get the cars fixed. Chores and maintenance and property and the way you live together in space have to be negotiated according to your own personal preferences. Some women like to take care of cars and some men like to cook. I do not care, but you'd better negotiate it with respect and cherishing. Now we get to the two really heavy items for negotiation. One is money, and the other is play, especially sexual play. Money. I make money, you make money, our money. How do we roll it through our relationship? Who's the one that's the comptroller, so to speak? We're starting to live together, we're engaged, we're working towards marriage. Do we get a joint checking account? Do I write out the bills? Do we write out our own bills? How do we put our money together? I have two formulas that I've seen that work. One is, it's a 50-50 deal. I'll put in 50, you put in 50. I'll pay certain bills, you pay certain bills. But we generally keep it separate. We're like two separate people joint venturing. Now, that could be fine during the engagement, but it gets a little troublesome when you finally are a unit in society with legitimate taxes, loans, house payments, insurance policies, various things that the world of reality sees you as a unit, not as two single people. So the other formula is that you decide what level of life you wish to live on. Do you want a $5,000 a month lifestyle? Do you want a $1,000 a month lifestyle? In that case, you put into a kitty the money that you have made between you or the money you're willing to put in. Now you say, well, we don't make the same amount of money. I have a formula for that. If you don't have a 50-50 relationship financially, throw in a percentage. Let's see. We are going to have a $3,000 a month lifestyle. Apartment, food, entertainment, travel. This is what it's probably going to cost us to live together. Now, I make more money than you. So if we both throw in 5%, 10%, 25% of our individual incomes, it may be different numbers of paper, but it's still the same percentage. So if you want a 50-50, you have to live at the level of the lowest partner. If they can only afford a $3,000 lifestyle and you can afford a $5,000 lifestyle, you're going to have a lot of extra money, and they won't have to keep up with you. But if you'd like to live at a higher, more luxurious lifestyle, then you've got to go by percentages rather than dollar for dollar. Now, who takes care of the kitty? I believe that each person has a right to their own money. When you earn it, it's yours. Put it into your own account and then write a check out of your account to the kitty. Now, the kitty can be run by whoever wants to run it. You may choose to alternate. I'll pay the bills this month, you pay bills next month. And as far as investments are concerned, which of us has the more respectable background to handle that? Between a couple, one usually is more towards the respectable, logical, financial, shrewd, and the other is often towards, for fun, for free, let's have a good time. That's the complementarity, which we need so much to keep the energy going. Similars repel, complements attract. Masculine attracts feminine, feminine attracts masculine. And I don't really care who does it, and I don't care if you switch roles. He may be in charge of finances, you may be in charge. He may be in charge of home decorating, you may be in charge. There is no such thing as sex, role, chores, or responsibilities. That is pure sexism, and not according to my system. So decide your formula, 50-50 or percentage. Put the money in a kitty and have somebody disperse the community bills. That allows each person to have their own piece of money to buy gifts with, to go out to lunch with, to entertain themselves, to buy that trinket or that tool or whatever. May you never, ever have a parent-child relationship. Daddy, can I have money to get my hair done? Wifey, Mommy Poo, can I have some money to pay for gas? May you never, ever allow your relationship to end up in a parent-child, because that's a negation of intimacy and sexism at its worst. The last item to negotiate is play, sexual play and non-sexual play. Now, first of all, never ever negotiate sexuality lying down. You have to be sitting, standing, walking, but never ever lying down, because that's too intimate a position. People's feelings are too vulnerable. You don't negotiate sexuality in that formula. What you do, however, is agree to communicate. Now, sexuality and your preferences and your picadillos and whatever you like, sometimes we're a little sensitive. So what I do is I ask you to take a piece of paper and a pencil, write down the things that you like and the things that you don't like, and then exchange them with your partner and have your partner respond, you know, well, I like this, so let's talk about it, or I don't like to do that. If you're sensitive about verbally communicating, do it in writing. This is my fantasy about my sexuality. So would you please take it into account and respond to it? And generally exchange the letters, because by the time you know the parameters, the out boundaries of your sexual needs, wants, it's almost as if to know is to lessen the anxiety. Then start talking about it. And what does he say to her? How do you feel about my list? Is there anything on there that is really sensitive and not acceptable? And she asks him, what do you think about my list? Is there anything on there that you really don't want to do or accommodate? And be rigorously honest, because this is the negotiable period. Don't hide or pretend. Don't live in a projection. Don't delay for another day. We're attempting to hear each other and know each other. So, with sexuality, put it out in writing if you're not willing to do it verbally. And if you're willing to do it verbally, talk about what you like sexually. Unless you're immature, very young people, you generally have experienced some of your sexuality. You might even be seeking your partner's help to evolve sexually. I've always fantasized this. Will you help me? I'd like to achieve this. So, with regard to sexuality and sensitivity, that's what I have to say. Now, you're in bed a while, but you're out of bed a lot more. Negotiating what you like to do. I have a direction that I give people that are working towards marriage. It's called a dream book. You know, as I said earlier on in another tape, senility is not having enough stories to tell your visitors so they'll come and visit you often. Make sure you have a lot of stories to tell. I suggest to an engaged couple or people that are seriously talking marriage, get a really nice leather-bound good book with nothing in it. You get them in the stationery store. And if you're really getting engaged and married, emboss your names on it. And in that book, starting now, write down small, medium, and large things you want to do and experience before the oven turns on or they close the coffin. Remember I told you memories are the things you'll end up with when you're in your wheelchair and on your deathbed? Memories. The secret of life is to have a lot of memories. What are small things? A couple of hours. I'd like to do this. I'd like to do that. I'd like to see this. Medium, an overnight or two, a weekend. What are big things? A vacation once or twice a year. Put down the small, medium, and large things you'd like to experience alone or with your partner, and use those books to build dates, to build weekend adventures, and to build vacations. Leave those books where you both can get at them and upgrade them your whole life. Those books will be heirlooms to your grandchildren. Look how many things Grandpa and Grandma did. They checked off all of these things. Look how they shared their life together, how they brought things to each other's lives, and how they built a life together. So the dream book about experiences is one of the treasures that a courting couple can start at any time. The last and final phase in your year of courtship, hopefully your courtship and not your dating, is the committable phase. That's the 9th through the 12th month. Usually people start talking future talk. Should we, shouldn't we, where would we live, where would you live? And ladies, I want you to know this. He'll often interview you before he proposes. If you were to marry someone, not necessarily me, where would you like to live? Not necessarily with me. If you were to have children, exactly how many children do you plan on having? They often interview you to see if there's going to be the possibility of their being able to live with you. So 6 to 12 months future talk begins, and somewhere between that 9th to 12th month, you better decide if you're going to become engaged. That ring, that announcement, that start to build. Ladies, if he doesn't know he wants you in a year, you better consider moving on. Detox is painful, but I want you to know a wasted, fertile, youthful, feminine body is not a good thing to have. When will the marriage be? Is it going to be after he graduates from school or you do? It doesn't matter when you marry. I usually say if you've got it set somewhere in that first year that you're going to be married, you announce it to society with an engagement. When you marry can be within a year or two or whatever it takes. That formal documentation, that religious ceremony, which often come together and sometimes don't. The most important part of the committable period is to evaluate how you and your partner keep your agreements. I have a pledge which I want you to raise your hand and take. The only way I know I love myself or my partner is by the commitments I am willing to make and keep. God help me do it. In a committable period, we're now showing if we've got the commitment to ourselves handled. Am I committed to being respectable? If so, what roles do I want? Do I want to be the social director in charge of time? Do I want to be the homemaking chef? Do I want to be the money manager? What sex role do I want? Do I want to be the penetrating giver, leader? Do I want to be signaled? Do I want them to signal? Who initiates how? How do we do this business of commitment? Remember, commitment is to self and shared with the other. What role do I want as the cherished person? Do I want to be cherished in all areas? Do I want my partner to lead me in every issue? Or is there a part where I want to switch roles as my commitment to myself? Do I have more skills in handling money than my respectable partner? Yes. He or she is generally the one that I would say, what do you think? I have so much confidence in this area that I have the best ideas that I am going to ask permission, get permission, and share my ideas so that we as a team, committed to each other, prosper better. So committability, the commitment phase. Committed to the role you've chosen as your major suit, committed to the communication techniques, committed to negotiating all of the items of time, play, space, and money, committed to carrying out what you've said you're going to carry out, knowing that if you break your commitments, not renegotiate them, but break them, you are not going to be respected by your partner, and you are not going to be cherished by your partner. So that is the way the commitment and the switching must take place, by negotiation, by keeping agreements, by not breaking agreements. Now, when it comes to the over 40 relationship, it may be a little different. It's one thing to be young and negotiating a strong young man and a delightful, charming, fertile young woman. But what's it like when we start getting older? Well, the perfect period means usually for the older couple, you both have some money. She may be a widow, you may be a widower, you may have had careers, you may be still working, you're at the peak of your careers. So generally in the over 40 relationship, there's often a lot of similarity between money, between health, and between time, because you're not in perhaps the baby producing mode or the how to go out and make the company function. So there's a lot of narcissistic similarity, which has to be complimentary, remember? Even if you're a great, respectable woman, you better find out if that man you're with wants to be respected. If so, there's only one job left for you, and that's to find out what he thinks, as long as he cares how you feel about it. During the imperfect period when you're over 40, it may be that the health is not as good. It may be that the baggage in your life, maybe you're a middle generation with elderly parents. Maybe you still have kids to raise. Whatever your baggage is, it will show up in later life, especially during that imperfect period. The money may also be a problem. Perhaps you aren't as employable as you used to be, and you've got to live on an income that's very, very stable. Maybe the partner has more money, and one has less money. And there has to be an equitable idea about how to exchange money. In negotiation, I always tell you, if they're 51% valuable, keep them. There's not a lot of perfect people out here, and the perfect people are either in a nut house or they're saints. So you probably are not going to get a chance to marry them anyway. In the meantime, find out your non-negotiables. What are the two or three things? Is it religion? Is it politics? Is it color? What is it that you have to have? The rest of it, negotiate and compromise. 51% valuable. Why am I with this person? Because they're good at, and I like that. If you're looking for the perfect person, get comfortable being single. Because as we get older especially, there aren't any. Younger, they have time to hunt for the perfect person. But age gets them too, especially for women who want babies and families. In the committable phase, what you're doing there is accepting what life has left for you. As a young couple, the Orient Express may be your means of travel. You may be able to do the Pacific Trail on horseback. But as you get older, those options may not be there. For the old couple, it may be Amtrak to San Diego, but you better be happy with it, because that's what the perimeters are setting up. So in effect, as life goes on, the big acreage may become the little acreage, may become the flower box, but that doesn't mean that it isn't any less fun. As long as you're with the person you love, who loves you, as long as you negotiate your items and issues, you can have fun even if you're in a wheelchair, even if you're handicapped. And that's what committability is all about. I promise to accept him or her, even if imperfect, as long as they're 51% valuable and I get my non-negotiables.
This is the end of tape 5. Fast forward to the end of the tape and turn it over to hear tape 6, Flirting to Attract.